everyone. Welcome back to the Eastmas Forum. I'm your host, Richie Burke, and I'll be joined by two of the firm's founding partners, David Hackworthy and Joe McNeil. David is the Chief Investment Officer, and Joe is the Director of Advisory Services. Both are also portfolio managers. We'll be discussing two case studies that are common to clients at Eastmas Partners. These scenarios are based on actual case studies and events at Eastmas Partners, but the details and identities have been changed to protect privacy. The first case study we dive into is answering the question of when can I retire? Here we'll take a look at a couple in the exact process that was implemented by Eastmas Partners to determine if they could retire. The second case study we'll be discussing is about selling a business and what business owners should be cognizant of to make sure they have a successful transition of ownership. Let's dive in. Joe and David, good to see you again.
Great to see you, Richie.
Yeah, Richie. Thanks for being back.
Absolutely. So someone who's interested in retiring, they give you a call. What's that initial call like the first time you talk to someone?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Richie. That is the overriding common question we get from everybody. That's a universal truth, if you will. When can I retire? So, you know, one of the first questions that we get and we respond to is just trying to take inventory of who that person is and what they're trying to achieve. Whether that's a phone call or we initiate a face-to-face meeting or a virtual call, you know, we're trying to determine really kind of five key critical elements. One is we want to learn about their current financial situation, just get an overview, if you will, of where they are in their life and what their financial picture looks like. Importantly, we want to know what their objective is from us. What do they want to, how will they best be served by hiring Eastmas Partners? We want to know about their concerns, near-term concerns, intermediate concerns, long-term concerns. You know, the question of funding, you know, can I afford to retire is paramount. That's number one. But 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, you know, estate planning becomes really critical and they want to understand how that factors in as well. We want to know about what do they worry about? What keeps them up at night right now? Understand their family dynamic, kids, grandkids, et cetera. And ultimately, we want to better understand how they came to learn of Eastmas Partners and how we can help them.
So the couple we're going to talk about today, which really represents a lot of couples that you work with that are looking to answer that question, when can they retire and how can they best set themselves up for retirement? Can you tell me about the situation they were in?
Yeah, without giving, you know, too much detail as far as background, the case study really represents a couple that were looking to retire and had worked in their career, building a business for the better part of 30 years in multiple avenues of income streams. And they knew they were at a point in time that they didn't want to work anymore, but they weren't sure, having worked in their businesses for such a long time, if they could do it. And trying to understand how the potential cash flows were going to work, how their assets could get diversified, and how they could successfully replace their income, it was really the key question.
And what was the process you went through with them after they came to you and really outlined their whole situation and you asked those initial questions?
Yeah, the process is really pretty straightforward. First, it's the discovery process. It's understanding who they are and what they're trying to achieve and taking inventory of financial assets, personal goals and objectives, concerns, expectations, really understanding who they are and what makes them tick. Understanding their investor psychology is really important. So that's kind of the initial step, is that fact-finding exercise that we go through.
Mm-hmm. In this couple in particular, they had a couple businesses, they had a bunch of income streams coming in. How did things play out with them?
Well, we took inventory. We got a really good understanding. They had not really gone down the path of claiming Social Security to begin with. So we went through that exercise of how you better understand what your benefits are and how those can be obtained. We looked at, you know, all their financials from retirement plans to individual securities to annuities to real estate holdings to life insurance policies. Really, everything that they had worked over their careers to build and achieve, we took a deep dive and understood how they all worked together mm-hmm. or didn't work together and how we could better align them to work together.
Yep. And what were some of the things that you guys had to do? Were there drastic changes that you put into place to get them to a point where they could retire, and could they?
Yeah, well, in some of the situations, they had a lot of illiquid assets that will be liquidated over the course of time. So real estate holdings, that both commercial properties as well as multifamily units that they no longer wanted to play landlord to, you know, so trying to putting together the potential exit strategy, if you will, from some of those non-liquid assets and how mm-hmm. that will factor into the plan.
Got it. And in general, when people are coming to you asking that question, which you said is the most common question you guys get, what are some of the commonalities that you see between these people?
When they become clients of ours?
Yeah.
Well, commonalities are they're all very hardworking. They've all been achievers over their life. They've been planning for this day for a long time. They didn't know exactly what it was going to look like, but they knew in the back of their mind that that day would come and that they wanted to hire a professional and a professional firm that would, in essence, lift that burden from them so they didn't have to do it themselves and they could go out and they could live their life and enjoy, you know, the remaining years, whether that's with their kids, grandkids, travel, visiting friends and family, et cetera. That's really the commonality.
You know, Richie, I think just to dovetail what Joe's sharing there is another element of commonality is that you typically find that someone's been in the world working hard, running their business, building it, and sustaining their spending needs through an income for years. They're not really paying attention to that. They're loving what they're building, and they're doing that with conviction. And so when that switch flips and they come to us to have a conversation, they want to understand how they can sustain the peace of mind of their spending needs and the resources to support themselves and to perpetuity for the rest of their lives and their family. And, you know, that's where, you know, and we've talked about being purveyors of risks. That's what we're really good at. And we're able to help that commonality, that client find that peace of mind. And we want to be able to build value with that over time. We're with conviction, focus, and quality. And we're able to do that by understanding the moving parts that Joe touched on. But then also building something with those assets that they've accumulated that can sustain that. And sustaining assets is one thing, but sustaining cash flow is another. And it's important to understand those two dynamics. And we're very good at that dynamic here at Isthmus Partners.
Mm-hmm. And as of this recording, we're still in the pandemic here. And the quote-unquote great resignation is kind of happening, a very interesting labor and work market right now. Are you seeing people at a younger age who are looking to retire, or is it the opposite where people are planning on working even longer with some benefits getting delayed at this point?
I don't want to speak for Joe, but from my lens and experience, we're not seeing people coming in and saying, I want out. You know, I think people either love what they're doing or they don't. I think obviously there are challenges with the labor work, you know, participation rate is one example that you can have a lens into the dynamics that are happening around the world. But I certainly are hearing and seeing younger people talk about how they want to have a quicker exit to retirement versus perhaps previous generations. But we're certainly not seeing a rush out the door at this stage, you know, from the population of activities that we're involved with.
Yeah, I guess the other comment that I would add is, you know, everyone's a little bit different, but one of the things that the pandemic has demonstrated is at least those in professional services may choose to work longer because they've got more flexibility. They can work from home. They can work remotely. The commute for a lot of people is diminished. And people might look at it a little bit differently and say, I can work longer.
That has made a big difference. One of the questions that I wanted to ask you guys are what are things people should be doing in their 20s, 30s, 40s to really best set themselves up for retirement so they're not coming to you when they're 45, 50, 60 and being like, okay, I'm ready soon.
I'll take a swing at that first, just because I look at and reflect back upon my working years and was encouraged at a very, very young age once I started working to at least take a step and do something, whether that was, you know, $100 a month or 5% of your salary. It was just do something. And getting off on that right foot can make a world of difference. I saw a study when I was in my 20s that basically talked about IRA investing. And if you started when you were 25, what a difference that makes versus starting when you were 40. And you could essentially, you could quit early, if you will, contributing if you started earlier. It's a huge, huge advantage. And that gets just the time value of money and compound interest and what a magical element that is.
You said 25 to 40, but even I've seen those charts too, and it's like 25 to 30, 30 to 35. There's a huge difference even in those five-year gaps or less.
Oh, it's significant. And, you know, knowledge is power in anything that we do. And I know Joe has been passionate and Isthmus Partners is passionate about financial literacy in our community and areas that we serve. But anyone that has income at any age, certainly younger age, needs to understand their own boundaries that way and appreciate the dynamics of some of the things that have been referenced here in terms of the compounding power of saving money and understanding that you only have so much bandwidth with the resources that you're bringing in. And it will only make you stronger and better as a person if you stay within those boundaries. And if you don't, not only does it have consequences long term, but I think it can begin to compromise who you are and what you're doing at that stage. And the world today wants to advertise that there's such a better opportunity somewhere else, especially if you can charge it or put it on a credit card or whatever. And obviously there are advantages that way, but appreciating and understanding and planning early and often will only serve one better longer term. And we encourage that. And we see that a lot with our families that we work with. They often come and ask us to help with their younger generations, either their children or grandchildren, to have conversations. And we warmly welcome the opportunity to lend our expertise and our resources to educate and to help provide at least some guidance that way for our clients.
Richie, if I just add one other thing, if there's one rule that we try to instill with people in their 20s, it's pay yourself first. Before you have all the other expenses, whether that's rent or mortgage, student loan, debt, et cetera, it's make sure, don't forget about yourself, because there'll be a day when you'll really need the money.
And just to dig deeper on that, when you say pay yourself first, I know what that means as a business owner, but for someone is that, hey, put 10% in your IRA, or yeah, just put that money away before you pay rent, before you spend money on anything else.
Exactly. If you're, you know, if you've got a qualified plan, retirement plan at work, 401k, 403b, or you're on your own with an IRA, you know, as you build your budget, first thing is think long term and think about your retirement savings.
Yep. All right. Now we're going to dive into a case study on selling a business. Joe, can you tell me about this business owner and the situation that they were in?
Sure. Well, the business owner that we're going to talk about is second generation. His father had started the business well over 30 years ago, and this individual came into it about 20 years ago. And one of the things we've seen taking place a lot over the last couple of decades is a lot of mergers and acquisitions. Of small family-held businesses that get rolled into larger enterprises. And that's what the situation was with this one. And the gentleman was he was ready to really diversify his most concentrated position, which was his equity in his in the family business, and was looking for alternatives on how he could sustain himself from the sale of this enterprise.
And what were the main obstacles that you faced working with him?
Yeah, well, there's psychological hurdles.
Being attached to the business a little bit after to business, creating it.
Being a family business, especially. You know, walking away from something like that that you've really put your blood, sweat, and tears into. And then trying to understand, you know, is it enough? Do I have enough? Will this sustain my family, you know, for years and years and years to come? So it's that financial hurdle, but it's also that emotional hurdle of letting go.
Yeah, there's a delegation element there. You know, people that are certainly most comfortable working with us are willing to delegate responsibility ultimately for investment decisions, albeit consistent with their philosophy of risk and so on. But that's a big hurdle, I think, for most people that have been the owner and operator and boss for years. They're still the boss of their own money, but there's an element of this that's being delegated.
So you got those emotional concerns, and if this is an M&A situation in a family business too, there's really no guarantee that the family's going to stay on and continue working there, right? You're giving up that kind of control.
Well, in this situation, that wasn't necessarily true. The person did stay on because they really needed that intellectual capital to remain with the business for a period of time. So there wasn't the immediate shock of exiting.
It's kind of an earn-out situation.
It was an earn-out for the owner. And really, you know, it's a control issue as well. So when you give up control, you know, you're giving up your baby, so to speak, but you're being rewarded for that.
Right. And can you talk about the concerns around tax sensitivities when going through a sale like this?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, you've got a significant asset that's been built up over a number of years, and there's embedded capital gains in that, which have not been taxed. As time has moved on, and there's a huge tax liability that has to be addressed. And in the world in which we're living right now, there's great tax uncertainty. We don't know what 2022 and beyond looks like from a tax standpoint. So we really wanted to look at today's environment and see if that was optimal, if it was an optimal time to sell, or if there's a better time.
And I just want to add that one of the powerful elements, I think, of how Isthmus Partners looks at these situations is to ensure that our clients are aligning themselves with the proper expertise from estate planning and accounting to make sure that those topics are fully covered. And our experiences in these areas are deep and allow us to have strong and vibrant conversations. But it's imperative that in these situations that the clients have great estate planning and accounting advice to cover all those details. And we're certainly, when we're not seeing those relationships or making sure that they exist to protect the client or the prospect.
And can you talk about what actually happened with the sale, with the M&A situation as far as timing? Was it public or private? You said it was a family business. Were there other family members involved? I know there's was gifting there, things like that.
In this situation, there was really just the sole owner. It hadn't passed to the second generation or anything like that. And he sold to another private company. So there wasn't a public exit.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a cash sale, and in return for shareholder equity, the client received compensation.
And what kind of compensation was that? Was it a cash deal, a stock and cash? Do you guys, Brian, get as much cash opposed to stock when these sales typically happen?
Yeah, you know, every situation is different that way. In this situation, it was a straight cash deal.
And there are situations that we see where taking some equity can be advantageous, and clients will most certainly, if we've been working with them, ask to engage our perspective on that. You know, if they're looking to participate and have the ability to turn because of the resources of the accommodation of a private equity investment of a third party or another acquisition component, you know, we can help and assist with that dynamic. And that all really comes back, Joe, I think, to, and Richie, to the dynamic of do you want to continue to have risk in this business? And part of that might relate to whether your needs and your objectives have already been fulfilled by this cash outlay, and you have the ability to take that incremental risk and stay around for a little while longer to try to turn it another notch down the road, so to speak.
When you guys encounter people that are looking to sell a business, a lot of times do they have things buttoned up where they need to be as far as the business and another entity taking it over, rolling it up or selling it? Or do they come to you and do some people come to you and say they want to sell their business, and then you dig into what their books look like and the infrastructure, and you're like, okay, it's going to take some time and you're going to need to make some major changes to make this happen?
Yeah, of course, it's going to vary. You know, we've seen it, depending upon the relationship, it could be very, very early stage. And then we're, in turn, referring them to counsel, legal counsel and tax counsel to really get the ball rolling. Or it comes at the very end of it and says, you pick up the phone and your client says, I just sold my business. How do I wire the funds to you? So it really runs the gambit.
Do you guys have any overarching advice to business owners who are looking to sell their business?
Most certainly. I think, again, coming back to the theme, knowledge is power. First and foremost, you have to have legal, sound legal advice. If it's a business that you've run for a long period of time, there are likely estate tax considerations involved here. If it's private, there are liquidity considerations, which involve, you know, the valuation that might be applied to the business. If there are multiple owners that are minority versus, you know, controlling interests, you get minority discount ramifications. Before a business is sold, there's definitely a circle of expertise that one should surround themselves with, to arm with information from a tax and legal perspective that can help, you know, certainly improve the valuation that they might receive upon that sale. You know, and then on the other side of the equation, you have to appreciate whether, and I think one should thoroughly understand whether this sale and what results in that will provide with conviction the capabilities that the sustainability of resources to meet the obligations that they have going forward. And that's not just limited to financial, it can be emotional as well. You know, it's not uncommon for us to see people retire and they're simply just not happy with that situation. So I think someone that takes time, a thoughtful process to understand that transition, not only financially, but also emotionally, will be better served in the long run. And we can certainly help bridge some of those dynamics. You know, we're capable and have the resources and experience to ask the questions, to flush out those considerations, to ensure that this is really in full in their best interest on a long-term basis.
Joe, do you have anything to add on to that?
Yeah, that's such a big part of our day-to-day duty and obligation to a client, is really serving as that advisor, that coach. You know, the term financial wellness has come in a lot, and we really, it's really what we're trying to promote. Just as, you know, a physician or any healthcare person is trying to promote physical health, it's our role to really help them with their financial health. And going through these exercises, that's where we can bring peace of mind to them and peace of mind to ourselves, knowing that we've gone through and we've done cash flow planning, we've done risk management, we've done all the investment planning, made it to a point that they're ready for retirement, income tax planning in consultation with their tax advisors, estate planning with their legal team. gifting to kids and charities, all those things get addressed. And together, you know, we can provide our clients with really the ability. I think at its core, our job is to help them make better decisions.
And if we're going to improve the lives of our clients, which is part of our vision, it's why we built this company. We love doing that. It's a rewarding element of who we are and what we do every single day. If we're going to do that with conviction and focus and quality, we need to have some sensitive and detailed conversations with a client. And I think from our experiences that way, we can help them think about things that they maybe haven't thought of yet. And ultimately, that is a purveyor of risk. It delivers a sustainable situation both financially and for their well-being and happiness on a long-term basis. Everyone wins that way. Our clients win, and our associates here at Isthmus Partners win with that as well.
We talk about asset liability match all the time. And, you know, in this situation, the client has a significant asset in the form of cash that we need to structure in such a way that's going to replace the income that he's been earning from his business. And there's a lot of different ways that we do that, ultimately deriving a total return from cash, from fixed income, from equities. But we can take the fixed income element of it, which is a safe and secure investment, and really strategically invest so that that matches what his expected need is down the road. So, for example, if you know they come to us and say, you know, we'd like to see $100,000 income, you know, every year, we can take a $1 million of their earning of their settle their cash flow, what have you, and ladder that out in such a way that they've got $100,000 that's coming due each year over the next 10 years. And that gives them the peace of mind that they really don't have to worry about the day-to-day volatility of the stock market because they know that they've got this liquidity stream that's built in.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of dynamics that play into how that might be structured, but the power of immunizing part of the portfolio with the spending need, which is really aligning a specific spend like that $100K a year with a high-quality, very safe instrument, is that whatever else is exposed to risk, and everyone has their own level of risk that way, and needs some element of risk typically to grow wealth for families. In order to have success long-term with a risk asset like equities, or which is common stock, you need to have time on your side. In the strategy that Joe has just laid out here, in its very basic way, has essentially bought time for the equities to do their job. And, you know, it's great to make money quick in the market. We're always looking to win every day with our strategies that way. But the real element of being successful in owning common stock as a business owner is understanding that it takes time. And, you know, one of our principles here is we're patient and disciplined with that objective. And we understand that it takes time for businesses to generate cash flow and reinvest in their business and earn and take advantage of weaker competition over time. And that dynamic, if someone's retired, you need to make sure that time is on their side for the equities they own. So it's matching assets with liabilities. And we're not saying liabilities in borrowing, but liabilities in the spending need that the client now has. And we're very good at that. And that's an element of how we're good purveyors of risk for an individual or a family or multiple generations.
So, Rich, if I could add to that a little bit, you know, when a client comes to us and they've told us that they're selling their business or they've sold their business, first and foremost, we understand that business wasn't built overnight. It was built over a long period of time. But when they make that decision to exit, the likelihood that they build another business like that in their lifetime is very, very remote. So we view that as irreplaceable capital. So you can't just hand over your life savings and say, go for it. You know, we have to be diligent every single day in how we manage their money. because it's not going to happen again. The odds of that are just very, very, very slim. So we treat it as such, that that is truly irreplaceable capital.
And we also admit that every investment firm is not perfect for every situation. But for situations where there is irreplaceable wealth that's aligned for family generations and for retirement, and appreciating the fact that quality and valuation is imperative to everything that we do, we're really good for those situations. Because when someone slides that nest egg across the table and they look us in the eye that they want to ensure that we can sustain that for their needs long term, we can look across the table at them and feel confident that that's the case based on our past experiences and how we manage wealth here at Isthmus Partners.
I wanted to thank you for joining me on this episode of the Isthmus Forum. For more episodes, make sure to look up Isthmus Forum on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find this episode and more information about the firm by visiting isthmuspartnersllc.com. Please share the podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues that you think would find this information valuable. And thanks again for tuning in. Isthmus Partners is an SEC investment advisor headquartered in Madison, Wisconsin. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or expertise. None of the information provided in today's podcast is to be construed as personal investment advice. If you would like a copy of the firm's disclosure documents, please call 608-729-0949.